about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 665. I am Lisa Sheps, I think. I'm also joined by my co-host, Ms. Nicole Shiro.
Hello, I'm here.
So we think. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at KOOP.org. Oh my gosh. Don't go away. Just stay where you are.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
It is Wednesday, April 20th, 2022. That is 420, folks. 420. On the show today, we have the Vortex and their show, I See You, Your Scene. And later we'll be talking to folks from Alchemy Theater and their production of Mac and Mabel. And of course, we are going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Dallas, El Paso, and Atlanta. Don't go away.
Reefer madness, reefer madness.
Reefer madness, reefer madness.
It does get your reefer blood madness. Pumping, doesn't it? Make sure. We're all a little bopping in here, whether, you know. I love that you played that today.
And so here's what so obviously it's 420, the unofficial Reefer Madness Day. Kim Simpson, a wonderful show of International Folk Bazaar, was not a Rastafarian show that I was expecting.
Well, that's okay.
On 420. We had a discussion. He's not a 420 person.
There you go.
You
aren't either, which is like totally like just blew my mind.
I'm not.
That you went there and I loved
that
it.
That stuff puts me to sleep.
I love
that's
it.
That's all it does.
It's okay.
It puts me to sleep. It does to you as well, Octavia?
Yeah, either the extremes. I go to sleep or I am paranoid. I'm jumping off walls, trying to jump out the window. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, you just heard a disembodied voice that we have not introduced yet, but we're going to introduce you.
No, that's okay.
These are our guests here joining us in the studio. Now that we're live again, we just love it. That voice you just heard was the incomparable Octavia LaToy. Hi, Octavia.
Hello. Hi, y'all. Thanks for having me.
And you're welcome. And the equally incomparable Simone Raquel Alexander.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. It is so exciting to have guests. To be back
it.
In the studio with you, to have guests
it.
In the studio with
yes,
you.
It feels
and
so
then
nice.
These two make it even more exciting.
I know.
This
is great. I just need to before we get into like some of the actual news, I just need to tell everybody a little story, a good story, kind of, that happened in the past week. People will know. Oh, before I tell this story, I should say that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and On the Air are not that of the board of the directors or the staff of this radio station, but simply our own opinions.
What's so funny is I don't even know where this story's going, but I love that we just started off with that.
So folks may know that the governor of Texas signed into law an executive order that makes it illegal for parents and caregivers of trans children to care and love for their children, basically. And they made that illegal, and some people have been prosecuted or in the process of being prosecuted for that very thing in the state of Texas. So we may also know, and these are connected, that the Lion King is currently playing at the Bass Concert Hall. We had them on the show last week. Mm-hmm. The cast of The Lion King got together when they found out they were coming to Texas. They went to Disney Theatricals and said, you have to do something for the trans community here. Mm-hmm. So they got a bunch of tickets and they gave them to the trans community. And I was one of the people that helped distribute them.
Yes.
And I just want to say how, first of all, how grateful everybody was that got the tickets and how heartened I am that this cast did this and the Disney Theatricals said, okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they backed him 100%. They were like, yep.
Because the things that are happening here are unconscionable, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And you didn't, but I just said it anyway. it was just such a joy that was made available. Just a shout out to Todd Hogan Sanchez as well, who was the person that got the tickets and then gave them to me, and I distributed. Another shout out to Joe and John Ivester, who are big advocates for the trans community, and they reached out to their networks, and those tickets went fast, and there were more people waiting for more, and we believe that Joe and John may have made some more available. So just amazing. Just so amazing.
Cool. That's freaking awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what an awesome show with it too. Like to have like the emotional, keeps your emotional journey on from that thing, you know what I mean? From that acknowledgement, and then to be filled with the
power. But I did learn this, and Nicole, you may know this.
I don't know if I do.
Well, it's been going on since the show's been reopened and touring. I did not realize that all the stuff in the house doesn't happen right now because of COVID.
Oh no.
So wow. All that, so the procession at the opening, the thing with the birds, doesn't happen.
On some of the tour, you're correct.
Oh, in our tour.
In this Austin tour, yeah. It was one of the places where it was happening.
What a sad thing, because that's one of the things I love the most about that show.
Yeah, same.
So I knew that was happening and I didn't want to tell you because I know that's what you talk about all the time.
I know.
So I was like, not going to spoil
my
that.
My favorite thing are the birds on the sticks.
I know. But it was interesting because a lot of people that I know who went who hadn't seen the show before or were sitting in different places, they didn't really see it or miss it. So that made me go, oh, okay. Awesome. But if like you're diehard, like you and I are, I'm the same way, Lisa. I want to be part of it. I want the birds. But here's the great thing is, the moment when the giraffe comes down over the audience and with his neck and goes back, the giraffe moment still happens.
Yeah,
just so cool.
I'm sure they still have the orchestra split on either side, which also makes it feel very
And so those people were not just not in the number anymore. It was rearranged. There were more people on stage and stuff like
that. Of course. But it's
visually just different.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But there you go. It's still a good show. And thank you, cast of Lion King. Thank you, Disney Theatricals. Thank you, Todd Hogan Sanchez.
Yes. I think it's still here another week or two.
I think it is. Austin.broadway.com if you want information.
It's just one of those shows.
We've had a million openings, almost every day an opening.
Another show.
We're going to start with, I keep forgetting what it's called.
The
Yiddish Theater Volksbühne, National Yiddish Theater Volksbühne. I said it right. Actually, that's exactly what it is. The National Yiddish Theater Volksbühne.
Lisa!
So we've talked about this on the show before, and it's been I guess this is kind of a revival, but Harmony, Barry Manilow's Harmony, about the comedian. Go, what they're called, the comedian.
I forget the comedians. I just know it's the Barry Manilow musical. So your Todd Hogan Sanchez is a Manilow.
The comedian harmonists, and these were a sextet made up of, this was in the run-up to World War II, before Hitler got really bad, but was still bad. This was a group of Jews and non-Jews that got together and harmonized music, and they're very famous. Mm-hmm. And they did it at a great peril to themselves. And that's kind of the story. And their popularity is the late 20s and the early 1930s, and they were based in Berlin. So this play takes place at Carnegie Hall in 1933. Pretty amazing. The reviews were really good. It's very interesting. They talk about how it's Barry Manilow and how some people, I'm not one of them, kind of think his music is pablum and not really all that great. But it's actually pretty complex and wonderful, and it suits this kind of treatment.
So, I don't care if you're a Barry Manilow fan or not. I, as a musician, would take offense to that. Who says you have to play your music has to sound the same all the time?
I agree.
Even writing a musical from something else. I get it. Jagged Little Pill is pre-written material for Alanis Morissette, so that's not the same comparison. Oh, but well, then this to say, not... like, Barry's writing something brand new, that's like Bryan Adams writing Pretty Women the Musical. Yeah. I don't know why he did, but he did, and it's different.
Nobody's disagreeing with that. By the way, the New York Times review is written by Elizabeth Minchincelli, who I like her writing.
No one would say that to Elton John.
Yeah, we've moved beyond that subject.
I'm just upset about that. I don't like that. I don't like that comment.
Well, never mind.
Just saying.
I'm not going to go.
It wasn't you.
We can go into Yanni. We can go into all those other people, the people saying similar things. But I like Barry Manilow. So there.
Yeah, he doesn't bother me.
Okay. She loved the production, although at one point she said every time the production, and she says it gets a little wobbly at time. But the music brings it back.
Yeah, and I think they still are working on some stuff and workshopping it. That poor thing. It was getting great traction, and then everything stopped.
Well, one would hope that after get it up. Yeah. So they this is an off-Broadway house. It had its premiere at La Jolla Playhouse in 1997. It also had a run in 2014 in Atlanta and a city I'm not familiar with, Los Angeles. Mm-hmm.
It's but like the little engine that could.
I love this line that she says in the review. In case you were wondering what it feels like to cry under a mask, there is a good chance that you will find out then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the director and choreographer is Warren Carlyle, who did The Music Man and Hello, Dolly. And I underline this specifically for you, Nicole, because there's one song that she says is candor and Ebesque, called Come to the Fatherland.
Yeah, I like that. I saw that line too, and I was like, I'd be so excited. Someone said I was like candor and Ebesque.
Yep.
Even if I was the Barry Manilow, I'd still be excited.
So it's playing through May 8th if you find yourself in New York. Okay, we're gonna zip through these next ones. So the next are, so we know the Tony cutoff date is like very, very soon. I don't know exactly when. I think it's next week. So we had 1, 2, 3, 4 Broadway shows open. And then tonight opens for Color Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be very exciting. We'll talk about that next week. But the first that opened was American Buffalo, which I'm not a big fan. I was never a fan of David Mamet. And currently with his current politics, I'm less of a fan of David Mamet. But the American Buffalo was written in the 70s, I think 75. And it famously starts with bleepin' Ruthie, bleepin' Ruthie, bleepin' Ruthie are the first lines of
it.
And it takes place in a junk shop. This is a very interesting cast.
Very interesting cast. It's Lawrence Fishburne. Mm-hmm. Chris.
You're going to talk about him last. Okay. So who's the other guy? I'm looking for my...
Lawrence Fishburne gets me excited that I...
And he evidently is doing an awesome job.
He's Lawrence Fishburne.
There it is. It only said American. By the way, our site...
American, it's Sam Rockwell.
Yes. Our site...
Another one, I know.
Nicole just loves to stop me in the middle of sentences when she comes up with stuff. Shame on you.
It came to me.
I know.
And I was just, like, oh my gosh, I love him.
And you can't. You have to let it out.
I know. I have Rain Man.
Anyway, did they like it? Had 5 thumbs up and 8 in the middle and 0 hatreds, 0 pans. It was reviewed by Jesse Green, of course. And I think I did say it was 1975, and indeed it was. So Sam Rockwell, Lawrence Fishburne, and Darren Criss.
Yeah, see, he's like nails on a chalkboard to me, which I don't know, which... Oh. Makes me so upset because I'm just so in love with the other two. I don't know if I could sit there.
Oh, no.
Simone and Octavia, did y'all watch Glee? Were you Glee?
Yeah, I like Darren.
Yeah, me too, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people do. Yeah. He played...
just had a baby recently.
I did
not know that. He didn't call. but he also played Hedwig. Did you see him in Hedwig?
He was one I did not go to specifically because I was like, no way, man, not happening.
Wow. Nicole famously has seen every Hedwig except that
and
one.
Except for him. Oh, and wow. I miss Taye Diggs. I couldn't get in for Taye Diggs, oh, wow. which I'm really upset about. But I've seen every other one.
So this is something I didn't know about David Mamet, and which I actually like about him. He does not allow amplification in his shows.
That I find interesting. Don't
I think
you?
It. I it's think it's play? Great. Yeah. It's a play. It doesn't need amplification. Mm. An actor should project.
Learn how to project.
Yes, yeah. But there is no
use
amplification.
Your diaphragm.
Nobody is credited with sound design in this.
Wow.
And the story centers around a junk shop and an American Buffalo nickel that one of the people want to steal. And it's kind of I don't want to say a mood piece. That's probably not giving it credit. But it sees a different side of life than, for instance, I'm accustomed to.
Yeah. Mm. That was well yeah. said, Lisa.
So... let's see what other folks said. Broadway News, Naveen Kumar said, like the novelty coin at its center, David Mamet's vulgar and compact heist drama no longer carries practical modern day currency. And that's what the people that are in the road were saying, or the in the middle were saying, it's just not relevant anymore. Yeah. Did they like it? Rangia said, while the characters are interesting to a point, they are not altogether complex, nor do they change over the course of the play, which I see is the core of this tragedy. And that actually, I didn't, you know, usually you want a character to move. You want the art to move. And
that
I never really
thought
of that.
That is something I always said about that play. I'm like, the characters don't go anywhere. And I always wondered, like, is that on purpose? Kind of seems like it is.
And this one I like. Helen Shaw of Vulture said, is this production good? Oh, certainly. It holds up Mamet's 1975 text like a coin, making it wink at the light. But is the play good? There now. Mm-hmm. You have me.
Wow.
Yeah.
So.
I'd like to see Lawrence Fishburne.
So it seems to be quite a dated. But Lawrence Fishburne supposedly just rocks the party.
He's a nice man, too.
I'm going to say, we're just going to talk very briefly, and people can go and read the reviews. Macbeth also... Oh, no, never mind. It's not. That wasn't an open. We're going to talk about it. But Macbeth is playing. It hasn't opened, but with everybody getting COVID.
I was like, that's had a lot of COVID. Closing and opening.
Sam Gold, who directed it, all the understudies were out. All the covers were out.
Gosh.
All the swings were out. And they still also... So Sam Gold went on stage with the script.
Wow.
And did the show. Yeah.
Hey.
Out, out,
I
and
know,
you know
right?
what I say. Out, out, Dan Spot.
Yeah, I'm like.
Okay, so we're going to just rush through these, although they really shouldn't be rushed through. Tracy Letts, The Minutes, opened to like raves.
I was like, raves.
And this is a very interesting thing. I never really understood this. Well, I didn't get it completely about Tracy Letts, but he's very macabre, and he goes into the macabre, and it's very, very much in the style of Get Out. Is that the movie?
Yeah,
where it starts, it's kind of funny, and then all of a sudden it takes a turn. It
takes you on a mental twist that you're like, oh, okay.
And this is
a show that wasn't ready.
This is a show that takes place in a city council meeting, and the minutes they're talking about are the minutes.
Oh.
There's one city council seat. Empty because that person has been asked to not be there anymore, and it all deals with racism. I don't know. It has to do with a Native American and either a comment or something they said about this Native American person. So it's got a lot of racial undertones and overtones.
Mm.
But it sounds interesting. I'll let y'all go to offstageonair.com. There's a link to the Did They Like It site where you can see all the reviews. I'm gonna just leave it there. The next one that opened, that got super duper raves. It got 12 thumbs up with one in the middle, which is How I Learned to Drive. And this is it's not a revival because it opened off Broadway 25 years
ago. But it's like the comeback kid.
Yeah, with Mary Louise Parker and David Morris reprising their roles from 25 years ago.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, and what's interesting, and just dawned on me, I said, how could they do that? But the play takes place over a span of time. And it deals with, I don't want to get too much into it, but it deals with sexual misconduct from a relative and them going back and remembering these things. So it has a lot of shifts in time. And so
you could shift from younger or earlier. Exactly. It works either way. Yeah.
But they said, I mean,
Mary Louise Parker's another one amazing. Live that is just like, whoa.
So yeah. I want to take a moment to read the first paragraph of Maya Phillips' review in the New York Times. She says, quote, "It's rare to encounter the kind of breathless silence I experienced during an unnerving hotel room scene in the unforgettable revival of Paula Vogel's How I Learned to Drive. On the night I saw the production, hundreds of audience members listened with rapt attention. I didn't hear anyone unwrap a mint or fumble for a tissue. Mm. I didn't even hear a whisper break the silence in the air. There was just a steady buzz of lights, suddenly deafeningly loud as they were performing their own monologue." I mean, I just think that's amazing.
That's really, yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Speaking of 420, she's Weeds, right?
Yes, she is Weeds.
Yes, she is. She is indeed. Yeah.
Exactly. So again, we don't really have time to go through everything because I think there's one more thing I wanted to talk about, but you can find a link to all those things on offstageonair.com. I thought there was
something
else.
If you forget to go later, you can enter your email address and it'll just come to you automatically. Yeah, you don't have to worry about
go to offstageonair.com, put your name in there, we'll send you our show every week. We're just going to send you our show every week.
Yeah.
So we are going to take a break right now, and then we're going to come back and talk to these fantastic people about this amazing show that I cannot wait to see.
Woohoo!
And as we go out, we're going to hear the comedian Harmonists singing.
Oh, I love it.
Singing a standard, singing Night and Day. Here it is. We'll
be back. Oh, I love it.
Night and Day.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and
Nicole
and
Octavia
and
Simone.
I should say, we didn't mention this. Simone is has been co-host here as a replacement to the, as best you could. So you did it over the pandemic on the phone with me at least once.
I did. It was a fun time.
We had a good time.
She did awesome sauce.
But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about Octavia LaToy's show, I See You, Your Scene, which I spelled your, Y-O-R, apostrophe R-E.
Oh, instead of the U. That's okay.
Oh,
thinking about changing it.
Creative, yeah.
So this is Octavia LaToy. This is your piece that you wrote. It's autobiographical.
Yes.
And Simone Raquel Alexander, you are directing, and you're also credited as dramaturg.
Thought
I'd say. Which makes sense for a director.
Yeah.
So tell us about the show, Octavia.
Yeah, so it's a collection of poetry. And this show kind of started at the beginning of the pandemic when everything was closing down. I started painting and because I couldn't act as much anymore. And I just found that time. And I think a lot of us took that time to reflect that quarantine time. And I found there were a lot of things I had to heal from, relationships and... racial things, and I just had this talking to a future self and also a younger self, like what I wish I had known.
So that's amazing. And we were talking actually before we went on the air, and I just find that so courageous.
Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy to put yourself out there and then put it out there in public.
Right, right. And I think that is definitely one thing that I did not take into account, and also going through the same experiences, after you have healed and feel like you're done and having to do that multiple times, and this is a workshop, so it will be done again, and then to have to do it in front of people, it's very vulnerable, and I don't think I expected it, and so and I feel terrible because in rehearsal, I definitely put up a wall and I close off and I trying to get ready for the regular show, and someone's like, no, you have to feel it like every night, and I'm just like.
I mean, within reason, too. I think Octavia also downplays how great of a performer she is because it really is just audience is in the crowd and you can see her feeding off of that going back and forth emotion of actual people in this space. So I'm really excited to be in the second production. We've been working on this for like over a year.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So actually, that what you said before brings me to makes me think that it could be very easy for a performer to like slip into that performer mode and, oh, I'm just playing a part. But since it's you.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, and that's a wonderful thing that you have a director, because you might not get someone saying, you have to live this.
It's
as painful as it is, you have to live it every single night.
Right.
How was that for you, Raquel? Raquel. Now I'm going to call you Raquel. Simone, how was that for you as a director? What I'm trying to get at is that that's not an easy thing for a director to do, because you have to actually take that safe space away a little bit to get what out of a performer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that luckily Octavia and I have worked together for a while in different productions, so we've also learned together, and part of at least my learning as a director is reshaping how we approach what is a quote-unquote safe space. I think we've worked with a lot of collaborators who have really renegotiated what that looks like and what that feels like. And I feel like instead we really approach it with a brave space, being able to tackle the hard issues, knowing that it's kind of our everyday life. I think especially as Black women, there are things that we just don't have the privilege of safety in because of how we identify, and being able to go past those things, those hurdles that come up in our everyday life, but also with the self-care involved too. So as much as the work is hard, I think making space for self-care throughout the show, making that really, you know, intentional and integral to the performance itself is what's most important, I guess.
And as soon as I wrote it, I sent Simone, multiple emails on all her accounts. And I was like, hey, you know, like, let's do this together, please. Because I just knew Simone is brilliant and one of the best directors I've worked with. And she's also really great in, tempering me, because I'll be like, oh, I have this idea. I want to do this. And she's like, that one's good. Octavia, this one, I encourage you to think about that. And this one, just like, no, you know? and so it's really great to have someone who is not, you know, it's great. I'm just so blessed. Yeah.
That's great. I wish we had our video running right now.
I was just about to say, I wish we had the video right now for all of this.
So knowing, I can say that we don't know each other very well. We haven't spent a lot of personal time together, but I've seen you perform a whole bunch. So my guess is that this is, you know, we've been talking about some heavy issues and very poignant and tough and hard. I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of laughs here as well, if I know you.
100%.
Yeah? Is that true?
Okay. Yes!
I don't know.
Wow. I wish we had the video again. Because you were like, huh?
Yeah, I was like, I don't know this time, Lisa, but...
There are definitely some fun parts. I think a great part about this workshop iteration is that we're also working with a lot of local artists. So we have a lot of original music that we didn't have before.
Wow.
And I feel
New choreography.
Yeah. I feel like all of those elements that we're adding in help with the levity, but there are also pieces that Octavia has written that are really coming from a place of love and fun and, you know, reminiscing.
There are a lot of love poems because your girl loves love.
You gotta love love.
You gotta love
With choreography, are we gonna get some jazz hands going? Because, you know, that's something we like here.
There's like a flick.
There's a jazz flick.
A jazz flick. You know? Yeah. There's some floor movement. So
That's awesome. So actually, I did notice when I went to the Vortex website, vortexrep.org, and saw the amount of people that are attached to this production, exactly, choreographer, sound designer, et cetera. It sounds like it's going to be a very well-produced piece as well. So an evening where folks can really go and get absorbed into the beauty of theater.
Yeah, I hope so. I feel like that's always the goal. You know,
there is no hope. There is only do.
There's only do. Absolutely, yes.
Lisa,
yes, we love this. I needed it.
So we're gonna go back to this, but I would be negligent if I just didn't mention that you are also in rehearsal right now for Coleman Domingo's Dot, directed by Lisa B. Thompson.
Oh, yes.
So we're going to have you guys on the show, but I just want, because I have you here, I just want to get a little sneak behind the scenes. How are rehearsals going?
Oh my gosh, rehearsals are so fun. And this cast is so great. And it feels like family as soon as you step into the room. I feel like we are always acting up in the best way possible, you know. And the first time I saw the cast list on the email, I sent Michelle a private email and I was like, ooh. Both Lisas don't know what they done. Me, you, and Jeremy in this. And then I told...
So that's Michelle Alexander, yes, and Jeremy Rashad Brown. Yes, and that's Lisa B. Thompson and Lisa Chef.
Yes, yes, yes. And then I told Dr. Thompson then at this. I was like... Oh, girl, you don't know what you did. And she was like, yes, I did.
Yes, she did.
I was like, she's aware.
Hello, she's aware. And so it feels like magic. I think I feel so blessed to do both of these pieces right now because both of them feel so magical in their own right, you know? Yep. And so it's so exciting.
Let's go back to I See You, Your Scene. When do you open?
We open this Friday. That's April 22nd to April 30th. So 2 weekends.
Okay. And you're at the Vortex.
Yes, we are at the Vortex.
Indoors, I assume.
Indoors.
Do you know what their current COVID protocol is?
Yes. So mask inside. I do also believe that you must be vaccinated or have a negative COVID test.
I actually looked at the website today and it was kind of funny because they said you need to act like the airlines when you eat or drink, but that doesn't count anymore.
I was like, oh, that doesn't really count. Yeah, that's a...
So where do folks go to get more information about the show?
Yes. So you can visit vortexrep.org. You could also visit VortexRep on Instagram. And the information should all be there.
And all the place. Well, I wish you the best. I wish you the best with the show. I can't wait to see it.
Thank you for having us.
Awesome. Thank you. I think you'll like the song that we're going to go away with, I think, because it really worked. This is from Gospel at Colonus. How Shall I See You Through My Tears? Mm-hmm. Here it is.
Ooh.
I hear your voices.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP 91.7 with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello.
And Simone and Octavia.
Hello, hello.
You know what? I've just got to look at the time because, because there is something I wanted to talk about from last time. Some Like It Hot is coming to Broadway.
Yeah.
With a phenomenal cast. Christian Borle, Adriana Hicks, and... friend of the show, J. Harrison Gee.
Yeah, and it's been trying for a while.
Yeah, it's been trying for a while. It's coming in the fall. But I have issues with this show.
What are your issues?
Well, it is rather insulting to the trans community. It's a story about a man in a dress that used to be what we always saw. I just have a problem with it. I do like, though, that they are...
I think they're changing and updating and
doing stuff. I don't see how they could possibly update it because of the premise of the show. And there's already a musical about it called Sugar I did. So there. Anyway.
I forgot about Sugar.
You can see the article about this on offstageonair.com. Let's talk about local stuff, shall we?
Let's.
So... Friday night at Ground Floor Theater. We just talk ground floor all the time. Folks and co-op listeners really love the performer Donny Hathaway, who took his own life in the 70s. Mm. Robert King Jr. Yes. and Ground Floor Theater coming together to represent the voices of Donny Hathaway, which sort of posits the idea of what if Donny Hathaway could have programmed his very last concert if he knew it was going to be his last concert because he was going to be.
I love pieces that look with historical fiction but look at things through a different light, like the What Ifs.
Yeah.
Or
yep.
Taking the imaginations of looking at through a different lens, basically. Yeah. I guess is a way to say it, but I like that.
For those of you who don't know Donny Hathaway, I'd encourage you to Google him. Learn about his music. Ooh. He was a soul singer in the 70s. He suffered from schizophrenia, and the voices in his head told him to harm himself, which he did, and committed suicide. So a tragic ending to a beautiful man's life and soul. Yeah. So the music is really great. There's a part where there's Roberta Flack comes in and sings with him, and not the real Roberta Flack. Okay. Octavia's looking at me. You got Roberta Flack? Y'all must be good. But rehearsals are going well. It's a ground floor theater. Three shows only. Friday night at 7:30. Saturday at 2:30 and 7:30, if I got that right. But you can get information at groundfloortheater.org. And then there was something else I wanted to talk about. Where is it? Where is it?
All the notes are already here.
Yeah, all the notes are already here. This is a tapestry.
Did you like that I was in your head?
You were. Thank you.
Come on, telepathy.
Thank you. I just have to find, I'd already closed my notes, so I'm going to do it. But it is at the Rollins. It's Tapestry Dance. Zell Miller III is part of it.
Oh, yes. Nice.
There it is. Now I'm going to pull it up and I'll have more information. So it is an interdisciplinary piece with Zell Miller III and, of course, the co-founder of Tapestry Dance, Acia Gray. They are doing this at the Rollins Long Center and April 21st through April 24th. You can get information at thelongcenter.org. And that's it. And now let's go to Today in Theater History.
Today in Theater History.
Thank you. That's our...
Stuff happened.
That is our theme song.
Liz is going to tell us what happened.
So Carousel, not one of my favorites, opened in 1945.
Not one of my favorites either, but people love the Carousel. I know.
The producers... wasn't one of my favorites, but is growing on me.
Yeah,
opened in 2001.
Really, 2001? Yeah. Seems like so.
And funny thing, Producers is one of those shows like Little Shop of Horrors that started out as a film. Wait, am I wrong? Started out as a film with Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then went to musical. It no. Went to, yeah. So never mind. Also on this date, Fun Home opened in 2015.
Oh.
And My Fair Lady in 2018. And Clybourne Park opened in 2012. Broadway birthdays. Ashley Judd. Betsy Joslin, who I don't know. Do you know her?
I know who she is, but I have to tell you an Ashley Judd, Lawrence Fishburne story.
It's you have to do it. It has to take less than... Oh, okay. We'll hear. So, folks, if you want to know what this story is, email me. I'll tell you. Jonathan Tunick, longtime collaborator with... what's his name?
I don't know. I can't think of
it. Anyway, I'll come up. Somebody's going to email me and say, you're stupid, Lisa. And Tim Curry. Also his birthday.
Oh, today is his bon anniversaire.
All right, so we got to... we have just a little bit of a second. So here's... So coming out of this group, I had a lot of choices to play. I decided I wanted to focus in on Fun Home.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, and then I said, so one of a lot of things I do, I want to play something that's not all that well known. But you know what?
You just go back to that
Ring of Keys. I cannot get away from Ring of Keys and all its incarnations. I just love Ring of Keys.
I understand.
And that Sidney Lucas is just amaze.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go out with that. And Simone and Octavia, thank you for joining us. The rest of our show is pre-recorded.
Yes, it was very awesome.
So here we go. We'll do a little bit of Ring of Keys, and then we'll come back and listen to our folks from Alchemy Theater. Hopefully this is queued up right. We'll find out. Here it is.
Do you feel my heart saying hi?
We spoke to Carol Hickey and Michael Cooper, who run the Alchemy Theater, and they have their production of Mac and Mabel. So we're going to listen to
it. Let's hear it.
All right. Here. Oh, wait. Hold on. I don't know that we can right away.
Do you have it ready?
I do. Here it
to
is.
To play.
Well, joining me here via Zoom are the principal people from the Alchemy Theater. And I'm really excited to have them on. I don't think I've had them on in the past, which is amazing. I have no idea. Number one, Carol Hickey, who's the managing director of Alchemy Theater and an icon here in the Austin theater scene. Hi, Carol. Welcome.
Thank you, Lisa. Glad to be here.
And Michael Cooper, the artistic director of Alchemy Theater and the director of Mac and Mabel, which we're here to talk about. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Lisa. Thank you.
Well, it's nice to be thanked. Well, first of all, I'm just wondering, you know, Offstage and On the Air has been doing this show for 12 years. And why haven't I had y'all on before? I could have sworn I've had the Alchemy Theater on before.
Well, I've never been on before because I'm currently splitting my time between Los Angeles and Austin.
Is that the one in California or the other one?
That's the one in California.
Okay. I've heard of that.
It's the LA. Yeah. Well, so I'm splitting time, but spending a lot more time in Austin now that the 2 years of not being active has gone by.
Right.
And really loving it and jumping in for this season, like full force. So it's all good.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about Mac and Mabel. Mac and Mabel is a musical with music written by, I was just about to say Danny Herman, because I don't know if y'all know Danny Herman, but Jerry Herman. and it's about the relationship between Mac Sennett and Mabel something or other.
Norman.
So tell us about the show.
Well, it is, I call it a play with incredibly beautiful music.
Play with music. Got it.
By Jerry Herman. And Mr. Herman does that. The late, great Jerry Herman. He does consider Mac and Mabel to be some of his best work. And yeah. You know, that's MAME, Hello Dolly, Le Cage aux Folles. And he does consider the music to Mac and Mabel to be some of his best work, which kind of drew me to the musical back in the 70s and 74. But it didn't do well on Broadway.
In fact, it didn't.
It failed. And that piqued my interest. I'm one of those directors that likes to say, you know, with the creative team that they had, and the composer and the book writer, Michael Stewart, that they had. Why?
Because it was directed and choreographed by Gower Champion and produced by, what's his name? The Evil, 42nd Street. I'll come up with it.
Yeah. Yes. And
he's the Scott Rudin of his time.
Yes.
And, David Merrick.
David Merrick, yeah. And, you know, Robert Preston, Bernadette Peters. So, you know, I, amongst many other people, thought, why did this not last more than 8 performances on Broadway? And when I dug into it, it became obvious that there was a lot of overproducing going on, and they kind of lost track of the relationship between Mac Sennett and Mabel Norman, which is a great study in relationships, because it was not a good one. And it was indicative of what was happening in Hollywood and the silent film era at that time. And the Alchemy is all about dealing with the truth and focusing on, you know, the realness of a story. And so I started thinking in those terms and just shifted the focus back onto the relationship and let the music support that, and started thinking about doing the show, which led years later to it opening now. It was supposed to open pre-pandemic. We had one musical rehearsal, which went incredibly well. And the next day we pulled the plug on it.
Yeah.
I
think we all know about that. So I want to go back and ask you a question. I've never seen Mac and Mabel. I know it's rather dark, but I've never heard, you know, most people call it a musical, and you just mentioned that you feel it's a play with music. And, you know, what typically people believe as a musical is that what makes a difference between a play with music and a musical is that the songs forward the plot. Does that not happen in this case?
It does happen. It absolutely does happen. And if you really, really listen to the lyrics, it's a complete continuation of the dialogue that's going on. When they made it a musical on Broadway, which is, you know, a lot of money was invested and a lot of time was invested in production value and production number, that's, I think, in my opinion, that's what kind of took it out of the realm of what it should have been. I know for a fact that I mean, I don't know for a fact, but I'm almost certain Jerry Herman and Michael Stewart sat in a bar somewhere in New York and said, let's do a musical about this very dark love story. And I think that their intention was to do that. And I catch glimpses of that in the original book and the lyrics to the beautiful music, but it just got overblown. And, you know, for the time too, audiences, people didn't trust, producers didn't trust audiences to sit through a musical that was dark.
And not at that time.
At that time, in the 70s. And, you know, it was all about keeping people entertained and giving them a nice ending and all of that. And that's not necessarily what we're doing. We're focusing on the reality of that relationship. A lot of research on the two characters and putting that into the framework.
Wonderful. So so there's actually two endings to this. There's the original ending, which is kind of dark and not happy. And then they changed it in the West End to have a happy ending. I'm taking it by what you're saying that you're doing the original ending.
Yeah, I don't want to give anything away, but...
That's not giving anything away. That's just the two things that we, that it's out there in the public domain. It's not a spoiler, in my opinion.
I think that there's an effort to be accurate about the story as well. Yeah. So, you know, we're trying to kind of hold the mirror up to nature and say, this is what happened. This was how it went down. So it's not a happy ending, but it is a beautiful, beautiful story and journey through the lives of these two very influential people. And I wanted to bring up something, which is that we partnered with Austin Film Society because they also are very in love with silent films, and they have some of the original Mabel Normand movies, silent films. And we're going to do an event with them that is on May 1st at 4 p.m. at the Austin Film Cinema. And the program includes three short Mabel Normand films, and we're gonna have a live piano accompanist. So that's gonna be, you know, very, very authentic experience there. And we're gonna have a conversation with a silent film expert and a sneak peek of upcoming musical Mac and Mabel at the Alchemy Theater. So I wanted to mention that and get that out there for people who are interested in kind of exploring and the whole world and the context of which this story takes place.
Wonderful. Let's dig a little bit into the production. I'm so excited about the two people that are playing the leads. Tell us about who's in your show and some of the other stuff that's going around with this production.
Well, of course, Sebastian Vitale is playing Max Sennett, and Sarah Marie Curry is playing Mabel Normand. And it is their story. It is their love story. But we have a really, really tight ensemble around them of a local Austin artist. And some incredibly talented people showed up at the doorstep and wanted to be part of the story, which is great. And, you know, it was an interesting, like, getting back into it, sticking your foot back in the water after, you know, 2 years of not doing anything.
Sure.
Basically. And so it was an interesting process of kind of slowly getting back into it. And once we were in the room and on the platform that we're performing on, it all came back really quickly and everybody was very excited about it. But
do you want to mention Adam and Richard as well?
Well, yes. Richard Serrato is our choreographer.
Wonderful.
Adam Roberts is the musical director and vocal coach.
Not familiar with that person.
Very, very talented people. And everyone really, you know, creative team and actors alike were interested in the approach because my approach is different. And I think as everybody that picks up this musical to do it finds out that they want to do it in a different way because of the reason that I explained before. So our take on it in a very, very small space, which we love, is we're going to keep the complete intimacy and complete reality of that story in the Master George Theater at the Carol Hickey Acting Studio.
which wonderful. Go ahead.
Yeah, which our patrons have learned to love, that that space and that intimacy.
Well, that's great. Why wouldn't they love it? Are you having a live orchestra?
No, we aren't.
Okay. Well, which is, you know, bands take up a lot of space. And I'd assume, you know, since you're in a small, intimate space,
it really wasn't because of that. It was because I wanted to stay true to what the story was. So there, Max Sennett hired a piano player at that time to accompany his silent films just for the actors. And she's a real person. All the people in the story are real, which is another fascinating thing. Everybody's playing a real person. And she is the piano player in the show and also is a character in the show. So the piano player is actually Max Sennett's rehearsal pianist.
Oh, so you will have you do have live music in the piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
A piano. Yep.
Well, that piano is creates beautiful music. So tell folks when you open, when you close, and where folks can go to get more information.
Great. We do preview. We have a preview on Thursday, April 28th at 8. We open Friday, April 29th at 8. And there's a Saturday show on the 30th at 8. And then we run through May 29th, playing Friday and Saturday at 8 and Sunday matinees at 2, except for May 1st, which is the AFS function that we'll be attending.
Wonderful. And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
www.thealchemytheater.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being on Offstage and on the Air. We need to make this more of a ritualistic thing next time you have a show. Come on.
Keep the conversation going.
Absolutely. Thank you
so much, Lisa. I gotta
give my life some soul. Okay. That is it for the show.
Hello. And
that, of course, is the Bernadette Peters from Mac and Mabel.
Hello.
How that didn't run very well with that that cast is crazy, but the Mac and Mabel here sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. The Mac and Mabel has some great, great music in it.
It
and
does.
You know, it's my Lady Bernadette there.
It's everybody's Lady Bernadette.
I know.
Well, we did it. We did another show. Folks can go to offstageonair.com. Hey, I want to know if you guys are listening on the podcast. So if you do, shoot me an email, lisa@offstageonair.com. Let me know. We've done over 600 episodes. Are you listening?
Yeah.
Are you listening, God? It's me, Lisa.
Tell us.
So,
email Lisa.
Next here on Co-op is Texas Music Mixtape.
Yes.
DJ Mark is here. He's brought his motorcycle into the studio. He's trying to run us over with it so we would get away from the microphone.
Well, you know why? Because there's a lot of good Texas music.
We're not letting him. We're holding onto the microphone for another 2 minutes. So the other thing I would encourage you to do on Apple Podcasts is to give us a review.
Yes.
If you give us a review, people will like us. I went and looked at our reviews. We had one review 12 years ago.
That's it?
Yes.
Okay, that's sad because we've been doing the show for 12 years and I feel like we've asked people to leave reviews before. Maybe Mark will leave us a review after Texas Mixtape.
It makes me think that they're not listening and I know they are.
I know because I get texts here and there. Well, that makes me sad.
It does make me sad. Well, listen, we're going to wrap up the show. We're going to play.
What you pick to go out with today?
Well, this is going to be, people will get used to that. They will hear this during our membership drives. This is called Funny Money from Flying Over Sunset.
Yes.
Which they just released that cast album. And it ran for 20
on an LSD trip.
Ran for 28 performances. That's it.
It was a very interesting commercial that I saw running in New York.
Yeah. Well, here's a commercial for Offstage and on the Air and DJ Mark and Texas Music Mixtape. Here
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
Papa's in the park to mooch. Mumsy's brewing bathtub hooch. Sissy sells the Siler's kissy wissies. Brother picks the pencil.
Nancy sissies.
Gramps is prince and phony quid.